Welcome to the Bonnet Talks podcast, hosted by me, Amma Apia. This podcast is a platform for young people all over the world to share their current experiences and thoughts about what the heck is going on, child. From the Black female dating experience to surviving adulthood struggles in London, we chat about it all like a FaceTime call. In today's episode, I bring on Gabby Whiten, NYU grad student, owner of a design studio, and content creator. She stops by to chat about her adventures as a PhD student in New York City, how she got there, and how she blurs the lines between science, communication, and creativity. Gabby also discusses what it's been like viewing the pandemic, aka the panoramic at this point, through her lens, living in New York City, having studied diseases. Gabby's journey is inspirational, and she gives such tangible advice about how you can maintain pursuing all of your passions. Let's take a listen, shall we?
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
NYU. I'm good.
I was going to say that's incredible, because I was thinking today too, I should like come up with a background or something, but then I was like, I'm going to put too much effort in trying to figure out what that background should be.
So they added student interviews to like our admissions process. And so like, you know, to reduce bias, it's like have a blank background. So
Oh my God, I love that. Oh my goodness. Gabby, I am so happy to have you on this show and to meet you virtually on this snowy day, because you're in New York, right? You're in New York. Mm-hmm. So you're feeling the big blizzard, everything going on.
I mean, I don't know where all this snow is coming from. Like, I enjoy the snow, but I'm from the South. Right. So like, usually that's everything shuts down and it's
I live, because I did learn a little bit about your story, because I have been watching your content for a while now, because found out about you from Brooke Michio, and mm-hmm. I think Katie Velotti has also, I think, mentioned you before. I think she follows you, so I love Katie. She's such a light, she and Brooke. And I know you're from Virginia. You'll probably talk about this mm-hmm. a little bit later. But I live in DC, so they're experiencing like the big snow right now.
Yeah.
So I'm in Connecticut right now, and my roommates, my friends are all like, what's going on like in DC? I said, listen, we're just so used to this already. I don't know why you guys are so surprised.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just like this winter. I feel like the past couple of winters actually have been like snow heavy, but
the Zoom studio, that's always how it is. So but I am so happy to have Gabby here, because I have been watching her content for, I feel like it's been a year or so now, and I relate to you so much. I think I said this in the email to you, because I just feel like we have similar backgrounds, and we also both studied similar things in college, and I thought about the PhD thing, and I ultimately didn't go into that, but we'll get into that a little bit later. But seeing you do the whole STEM thing, and girl, you're doing it. You're killing every single part of it. The fact that you're doing that, and then you also have the time to explore your creative side and really use that, like, you know, combine both of your passions, is really awesome. And I think a lot of people don't think they can do that or make the time for it. And so I was just excited to have you on, Gabby. So I hope you're excited too to be here.
I'm so excited to be on the pod. It still blows my mind that I can just like connect with so many different people, like all over the country, all over the world. Like, it still blows my mind all the time. So that makes my heart happy. I'm excited to be on the pod. So.
Yay. Okay. So let's start off with this. You know, who are you? What have you been up to? You know, like, what are you doing? We want to hear the quick life story in like 30 seconds, I guess. daunting, but you know, go for it. You take the floor.
So hey everyone, my name is Gabby Whiten. I am a full-time PhD student at NYU, but I'm originally from Chesapeake, Virginia. I lived there for 18 years before I moved down to Chapel Hill, North Carolina to go to UNC for undergrad. I studied chemistry there, and that's kind of where I got first like involved with biomedical research and kind of that sphere. I remember when I was a first year in college, I was very much on the path of like doing pharmacy or being like a traditional medical doctor. And so when I, you know, got my scholarship to go to UNC, one of the requirements was doing like bench work research. And so yeah, that just was kind of a little nugget that kind of got me into potentially going down the research path. And yeah, so after, you know, a couple years of doing that, I decided that I wanted to get a PhD and went through the admissions process. Actually had no interest in moving to New York, I would say, before
really
before my senior year of college. I went to New York for fall break, actually, with some of my friends, and I was like, I don't know why, like, I love like movies that are like set in New York City, but it's just like not anywhere that I necessarily like pictured myself living at any point. But when I came to visit here, you know, there's like that electricity about the city that I feel like everyone talks about, and you know, I was a victim.
You were a victim. You fell for the games.
So that kind of put NYC on my radar, and I was like, oh, you know, like that's Columbia, that's NYU, like those are really good schools, like you know, I should maybe apply to them. And so that's kind of how I got roped into the NYC thing.
I love it, I love it.
Yeah.
Oh my
but
goodness.
But I ended up joining the NYU program, and so now I'm a PhD candidate, actually, now in my third year. And yeah, I live in New York City now, and it's good times.
Oh my goodness. But you know what's funny? I know you have kind of been all over, you know, before moving to New York City. So you're from Virginia. And I know you went to, is it UNC Chapel Hill, or right? Mm-hmm, so you were there. And then you were actually did research in Texas, I believe. And then you did it in San Diego, which I might be moving to San Diego this summer. So as soon as I
oh,
heard
my goodness.
You say that, I was like, why is Gabby, like, come on, Gabby and I are like...
First of all, San Diego is so stunning. I'm like slightly jealous. The weather is like delicious. But yeah, I did do a couple of research internships in Houston at Baylor College of Medicine and then at UCSD. So yeah.
That's insane. Yeah. So that makes me wonder too. So you didn't see yourself in New York City, then you ended up there. You know, how has being in New York City studying STEM, how does that kind of change your perspective or your thoughts about where you want to go, going forward? Because I know New York City is so fast paced. There's so many things going on. And then with STEM in general, there's so many things happening all at once. Being able to live in New York City as a 20 something year old can be very life changing and impactful, because that's just the time we're in. So how is that changed you being there versus these other places you've kind of, you know, dipped your toe in for a few months while doing research?
Yeah, that's actually a really great question. I think, you know, for me, I feel like when I was younger, I very much saw like my career path as being quite linear. It's like you go to college, you get a job, and that's like,
right.
It's just like, you know, that I feel like that's what my parents' career was. You know, they both worked in their, you know, respective jobs for 20 plus years, and so that's just what I knew and that's what I thought. But I think what's really interesting about my journey specifically is that it's very much going to be like up curves around going all over the place. And that's, I feel like, what's really exciting about it, and maybe what, you know, subconsciously drew me to New York and even to a PhD. Because I think what people don't talk about is a PhD, you're like obviously becoming an expert in whatever specific research you're studying, but you're also learning all these other soft skills that I think prepare you for other job opportunities that maybe you never like would have thought of. So now I'm being introduced to these alumni who, you know, maybe do medical writing, or they work, you know, for the government in policy, or, you know, all these other consultants, and they're like all these other things. And so now I'm like, oh my gosh, like,
you're like, wait, there's so much more out there to experience with this degree I'm getting. Yeah. That's so awesome. Cause I in undergrad, I went to UConn. I double majored in molecular and cell biology and communication. So I had to go through the biochem, the organic chem, child, you know, listeners know. All right. It was a struggle. Okay. You know, but so I went through the whole thing, and my plan was to be a medical doctor, and I ended up not doing that. I actually went into business. So I'm actually getting my MBA at George Washington University. So specifically like focusing in like international business, and having the STEM background is really cool, because I see a lot of people who kind of went against that linear path, and now they're doing so many other things like consulting, and people don't even think about that. They don't think that those skills you do learn from STEM can really be applied to so many different things. And they're very valued because they're very like, you know, you delve deep into research or you think about things in a very innovative way. And those are the skills that people really need right now, especially when, you know, we're in a pandemic and it's kind of disrupted our traditional way of thinking and our way of doing things. So I think that's really, I think you're absolutely correct on that. That's really cool. Have you thought about like what you want to do afterwards? I know that's like the big daunting question. Like, oh my God, like that's the question. That's like the question you get asked by your auntie at the Thanksgiving table. And you're like, please just don't.
It's like, be blessed. Be blessed. You know, I have thought about it. And because I feel like I have so many different interests, it's hard for me because I kind of have to be like, okay, do I realistically want to like see myself doing that in like a professional setting? And what I'm kind of playing with right now is I feel like there's a big pain point gap in how scientists communicate with the public and how we've kind of gone about educating, you know, in K through 12 and undergrad, just like basic science. And so I really feel like I'm not sure how this tangibly would be a, you know, job or like position, but I really want to get involved in kind of bridging that gap between scientists and the public and how we communicate our research in, you know, an accessible kind of way. So that's kind of like what I'm playing with, but
I love that. I also thought about that. But so when I double majored in comm as well, that was the one thing I thought about too, because there is such a gap. And even we look at it within the context of coronavirus, you know, people's understanding of what it is and how it's evolving and how the vaccine works, there's a huge gap in that. And that's what we're seeing that play out in real time. And so we need those skills, you know, to actually bridge that gap and actually inform people about what is out there and what they can do to protect themselves and understanding their own medical health and all that. So I think that's, I 100%, you'd be perfect at that too. Cause you also, I think you have the creative side and you really work on a lot of, you do of your own form of communications through your passion projects and side projects. So maybe you can come up with an innovative, creative way to do that. Cause we need it to make it more fun too. Sometimes science is definitely fun, but people have the negative connotation that it's like, oh, it's too much or it's too hard. But like, you know?
Yeah. And that's like the most frustrating part about it, because for me, it's like, I get excited by science. Like even when I was younger and like, you know, learning very basic, like bio, like high school biology. But then, you know, you get into undergrad and you get into these lead out classes and my literal professors will say like, oh, if you can't do this, like good luck. Or like, you know, there's like, if you can't do it, sorry, try something else. And I feel like science is too important to approach it that way. So
oh my goodness. And so how has it been like being a Black woman in STEM in the classroom? Because something I also relate to you on is I think you went to a private school for, was it elementary and middle school? And then you went to a public high school. Right. So I went to a private Catholic elementary, middle school, and high school. And I was someone who was very interested in, you know, physiology and anatomy. And I just remember, you know, most of the time I was the only Black girl in the classroom. I went to an all girls high school and it was 600 women in the school. And I was like one of like 5-7 Black girls. And it's like, how do you, that's already daunting in itself. But then when you're the only Black one in STEM, it, like interested in taking those classes, it's a lot. So I wonder how it's been like for you in those spaces too.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely tough. And I feel like the feeling that I get stuck with is always being like underestimated or like not taken seriously, which I think is frustrating and constantly having to like prove yourself as like, I feel like the famous monologue in Scandal, it's like you have to work like twice as hard to get like half of the crumbs. It's like
literally,
you know, a lot of times how it can feel. So
oh my goodness. And how is that translated into the research space too? You know, did you face a lot of adversity as a Black woman in research, you know, in terms of working with other PIs or other researchers as well? Because I know I know a few people in college who kind of, even as just a woman, right? There's mm-hmm. so much, it's kind of that underestimating thing again, you know, like, and there's a lot of that that plays out in research, at least that I've seen in my own. So I wonder how that translated for you there too, in that space.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was very lucky in that the scholarship that I got to go to UNC was, I guess the purpose of it was to increase minoritized groups in science in research. And so, you know, my cohort were all people who essentially looked like me and could relate to the experiences that I've had. And I think that is where community and inclusion is really important, because, you know, maybe, you know, in the labs that I was in or the PIs that I worked for, you know, generally white men, and, mm-hmm. you know, microaggressions are definitely something that you have to deal with on the regular. Yep. But I think being able to have a community and a support group that go through this, you know, go through similar experiences and kind of push you and motivate you to keep going is definitely been, I would say, probably the most helpful. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I definitely feel like it's tough, because you're like, oh, why do I keep putting myself through this?
I know. Yeah. It's like, I could have had the easy way out. Why did I do this, girl? I know. I feel that. I really do. And I think that's what is so important that people need to understand is, you know, representation can really be a catalyst for a lot of people, right? I think, you know, for me, I didn't have someone who looked like me enter these spaces that I'm now currently in. And it was tough to do that, but I knew I needed to, in order for other people behind me to also have that same opportunity. And they always tell me how important it is to them. And so that's why it's so important that, you know, that kind of program for you, like, you were able to be a part of something so incredible, because they're really putting the work in to really diversify an industry that really has no diversity, which is so sad. Tell us a little bit about your research as well, because I know you get very passionate about it, and I can already see the smile creeping up on her face. So I want to give you the chance to just talk about what do you do in your research at NYU?
Yeah, so like I said, I'm doing my PhD in pharmacology, so I'm really interested in the mechanisms of human disease, so specifically how, you know, our body and our cells kind of take processes that are meant to sustain life and how those are kind of corrupted in the disease process to kind of go haywire and affect, you know, the human body in a negative way. And then further, how, you know, we can develop therapeutics and treatments to cure these diseases. So that's kind of like in the science world what I'm very much interested in. And so in the past I've studied pancreatic cancer, and I've done more like medicinal chemistry, so like very much like beakers and chemicals and, you know, making drugs and that kind of thing.
We love it.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
But, you know, for my PhD, I kind of wanted to take a more, I guess, biological approach and more so study mechanism and proteins and, you know, more cell pathways and that kind of thing. And so my current project is looking at iron metabolism in a neurodegenerative disease called Friedreich's ataxia. And Friedreich's ataxia, it's a rare disease, but it's quite hard to watch patients who suffer from it, just because it is taxing, and it's taxing on the body from a young age. So I think like the average age of onset is like 9 years old. You know, this is something that people have to deal with until, you know, their 40s, 50s. And then they also experience, you know, a very early fatality rate. So, and there's, you know, there's no cure for it, and there's not a lot of research that's done about it. And so, you know, I don't know. There's just something about working on projects that are in dire need of advancement that was really kind of compelling in my decision to kind of pick this disease and pick this project. Mm-hmm. But yeah, also I'm a big chemistry person. So a lot of the, I guess, day-to-day work that I do is, not so much anymore, but, you know, I used to do more of the, you know, straight chemistry, beaker stuff. But now I work with cells, and, you know, I'm doing these kind of fancy microscope experiments, and so that's what I kind of do day to day. But yeah, very brief overview.
No, that's interesting. No, that's so interesting. And it makes me also wonder, how has it been for you as someone who does study generally diseases and, you know, medicinal chemistry, you know, how has it been experiencing the pandemic from both, you know, the New York standpoint, where New York really was suffering, you know, very early in the pandemic stages. They were one of the major cities, obviously, that, you know, had a lot of many positive cases. And then also from the STEM standpoint, in studying diseases, like, how has it been for you experiencing this pandemic and seeing how people are reacting to it? Is it frustrating, or is it like, you know, is it eye-opening for you? Like, what were some of the feelings that you've had in over the past few months?
Yeah, so I would say, great question. Definitely mixed bag in that from a science standpoint, I think it's actually kind of incredible how quickly scientists have been able to make advancements. I mean, you know, having this vaccine technology that you've worked decades for kind of come and actually play a really integral role in an actual pandemic that's, you know, actually something that we really need to be able to solve quickly, I think was actually incredible. So from that standpoint, you know, huge advancements that really, I feel like, light a fire under everyone else to really be able to make those same impacts. On the flip side of that, there was a lot of frustration in the sense that I feel like science became weaponized in, you know, and for a discipline that's very much based on, you know, evidence and data and, you know, being able to repeat it and make it reproducible and have a very unbiased approach and look at it and see that be weaponized or, you know, politicized for whatever gain. Was very frustrating. And yeah, very much like, girl, why are people, you know, attacking this process that, you know, you know, for better or worse has, you know, been pretty accurate in the past. So
girl, I know. I mean I've had the same feeling too of just, I just wish, like, this shouldn't be politicized. Like, health is health, science is science. And I, again, like, the science works. I think that's the thing people need to, they need to realize, the science works and the process has been proven over and over again. And if not, you know, that's why we have trial and error. That's why we have this process to make sure we do get it right and that we do learn it and keep it moving. And I think it's so, I think what's most frustrating too is like the reaction to the vaccine and like whether or not people should take it and like understanding the implications of what this is, right? And it's just like, there's so much like out there that I'm just like, I can't, I'm like, I'm just gonna shut this off because y'all crazy. Y'all are being crazy right now. But it, and it's sad because the thing is, people do need to understand, and there's just so much false information out there that is just kind of like, people don't deserve that. They need to know what's going on and know at least that scientists and, you know, scientists are trying to figure out and get us the best information as quickly as possible. So it's just been so hard to watch. I think it's just like, oh,
yeah. The misinformation, like, is I think is the hardest part, because it's like, it becomes like a spiral, right? So it's like one batch of misinformation is interpreted like 75 different ways, and then you go from, like, you know, one misinformed statement to like 89.
I know, girl, you know. literally it's a catalyst. It's like, what is going on?
Yeah, and it's, you know, the internet is fast and it's wide reaching. I remember I was, you know, I had a conversation with my grandma the other day, because she originally had turned down her appointment to get a vaccine, and my mom was like, I feel like you need to talk to your grandma. And I was like,
you're like, Gabby, go talk to her, please.
Yeah, and I was just kind of like, well, what, you know, what's going on, like, what did she say? You're like, and she had seen something on Facebook that was essentially like they had put AIDS in the vaccine or something. And I was like, you know, as like a science person, I was like, well, that simply just doesn't make sense, because AIDS is like the disease that you get from HIV, which would be the virus and the thing that you would actually put into something. And I was like, well, that just doesn't even make sense. So I, like, you know, do my little Google searching, like, where the heck did this actually come from? And it was like, the original graphic was someone saying, you know, how they make a COVID vaccine so quickly, like, why isn't there a vaccine for HIV? So like that initial graphic, you know, eventually distilled down into my grandma thinking that there was AIDS in the vaccine. And I just like,
get out of here. What?
It's wild. It's really wild and it's dangerous. And, you know, and you know, that's one of the reasons why I feel like I'm so passionate about talking about the vaccine, just even on my channels, because it's like, if I can, like, you know, cut somewhere in that baseline that will, you know, prevent someone from having that kind of misinformation swirling around, I feel like it's almost my responsibility to do so. So, yeah.
Girl, no, well, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say next that I've noticed that you have been talking about getting the vaccine process. I don't know if you've gotten your second dose yet. I remember you posted about the first one. Oh my goodness. So yeah. So I thought that was really awesome that you're doing that because you recognize the platform that you do have and that you have built. And it's also, I believe, presumably your base is, you know, young females, young women.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it's really important for young people to understand the implications of everything going on. Also the impacts that we have in terms of propelling or slowing down the pandemic, right? And so I think that's really awesome. And it's also hard to do that sometimes, depending on, I guess, the niche you're in, because I've noticed a lot of people, especially like fashion, lifestyle, niche bloggers or influencers. I hate the word influencer, but you know what I'm saying. but you know, a lot of people feel like they can't speak out and say these things. Same thing about even Black Lives Matter. Like, people feel like stepping out of these worldly current issues is like, people would be turned off by that. But in reality, it's so, so important. How has that been for you in sharing these events on your channel?
Yeah, I mean, so I guess, you know, my approach to, I guess, the whole content creation thing is like, you know, my interests are that, you know, I like fashion, I like beauty, and I like, you know, these, you know, vlogging, and I do all this, but that's not who I am as a person. Like, I still have, you know, morals and values and things that are important to me. And so I feel like as people, we almost have this obligation to, you know, not be robots and to communicate that to your audience. And yes, like, you know, when I was posting about Black Lives Matter and posting about, you know, the presidential election, like, I lost hundreds of followers. Mm. And, you know, part of that is like confusing because I'm like, I'm literally a Black woman, like, instead. And like, you know, I consistently talk about social justice things. Like, what about, like, what am I posting now is like, no.
I know, it's like, no, you knew what you're getting yourself into. You co-signed on this when you press follow.
Like, what just happened? Did you think that I like didn't think Black Lives Matter? Like, that seems like counterintuitive. Like, I don't know.
Listen.
But again, like, I think it's really important for, you know, creators, specifically creators that come from places of privilege, to, you know, talk about these things. So yeah.
Oh my goodness. And with that, can you tell us a little bit about how you started your passion projects? If that's like what you'd like to call it, your side hustle. How did you get your start online?
Yeah, so I started my blog actually with my friend Hannah when we were sophomores in college. And it was originally a baking blog, which I always think is funny because,
wow,
like,
what? You know, where is it? We need it. That is what the people need for quarantine content.
Yeah, I know. We were about, you know, 3 or 4 years too early.
But, you know. Yo, ahead of the curve. We were innovative. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, you know, we started it in the summertime, and our great, you know, idea, our great business plan was that, you know, you get on Pinterest and you see all of these recipes and everything looks so good, and then you go and make it and it's like the ugliest thing you've seen in the world, or like, it's disgusting,
you know,
and it's like, what's the truth? Like, you know,
you know the vibes, girl.
Yeah, so we were like, oh no, we're gonna do these recipes, and I think we focused mostly on baking because that's like what we like to do. And we're like, we're gonna actually make these recipes and like actually say like if they're good or not.
Tell the tea. Tell the tea, please.
Yeah, we're gonna be real. It's gonna be, you know, a real thing. And then we realized, like, okay, going back to the dorms, like, with what oven are we cooking?
the kitchenette on like the fifth floor, like in the corner.
It's like, you know, we don't have any of the ingredients on hand to do any of these like complicated baking things. Also, we go to two completely different schools that are like across the country. So it's like, I don't know what the long-term planning simply just was not there. But that's what kind of caused us to pivot to, I think, you know, a niche that was growing at the time, which was kind of like the college lifestyle, you know, that kind of thing, like how to decorate your dorm room and how to balance like all of your extracurriculars in class and like stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what we pivoted more towards. And then I would say I didn't start vlogging for my YouTube channel until I moved to New York. So at that point, I guess that's like 2 years ago.
Right.
And around the same time, my friend Hannah had taken a consulting job. I think was just, she wanted that to be kind of her main focus. And I think she kind of fell out of the passion for blogging. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of when we made the joint decision to say, okay, you know, like I can take it over and kind of rebrand it and make it into more of a post-grad lifestyle and just, you know, make it more focused around like my life and what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how it changed to being Gabby in the City and kind of connecting my blogs to it. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. I think that's something you mentioned was pivoting. And I talked about this very recently in my episodes where it's so important to realize like what's sustainable and what's not, and just try and make a change and pivot and show, you know, what is really going on. But something I think is really interesting with your content is you don't really focus too much on the grad school thing. It's really kind of your passions outside of that, which I think is really mm-hmm. interesting considering how the current influencer blogger landscape is very focused on being authentic, which to most people translates to showing every single aspect of your life and what you're doing and talking about that. And so how did you come to the decision to kind of separate those two things, and how has that played out for you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess for me, I just felt like, you know, from 8 to 7, 9 to 5, I'm like doing science. I'm a grad student. That is like my life. That is what I talk about. That is what I do. And so anything that I do outside of that, for me to really feel motivation and passion for it, I feel like it needed to be something that was more creative, mm-hmm. just for it to be fulfilling. Because, like, you know, I do think some people, you know, they like their channels who are grad students or, you know, in law school or med students who talks, you know, solely about being a law student or being a med student. Like, the value that they're putting out in their content is serving a completely different purpose mm-hmm. than, like, how I want my content to come across. So it's kind mm-hmm. of like, you know, and it's something I don't see a lot of other creators doing who do have kind of the other stuff going on, is that
right,
you know, your position or your title or your job doesn't have to define like everything about you. Like, you
exactly
can, you can have other interests and you can, you know, talk about that and make a platform around that. So I don't know, that's just how, like, my personal approach, like, I knew that I was going to be fulfilled and more passionate about being able to talk about other stuff as well. So
yeah, but that's very interesting because I think then it makes your audience really get to know you outside of that. And they're in, by them subscribing and, you know, following you on these different platforms, they're investing in you, not necessarily the idea of NYU grad student, which I think mm-hmm. a lot of people, especially with the college lifestyle kind of videos, it's hard to maintain that after you graduate, because just things so much just changes. Like, even like a day after you graduate, it's like, oh my God, my life just went into a quarter life crisis. Like, I just, like everything just changes, right? And you're sometimes you're interested in doing different things, but then your persona has been defined as kind of, as you said, by, oh, I go to this school. But it's like, well, who are you outside of this program or outside of this school? And I think, to me, I mean, personally, I think that's more interesting, because then I'm like, well, I connect with Gabby. Like, that's how it was for me. Like, I connected with you because I just felt like we had similar like interests and just similar ways of thinking. And then I realized you went to NYU PhD program, and it's like, oh my God, like I also did X, Y, and Z in STEM. You know what I'm saying? So then I'm like mm-hmm. more even committed. So I think that's like really awesome that you're doing that. And it's also just, you don't want to get burnt out. Like, from literally, no one wants to talk about a PhD program 24/7.
Like, literally no one. Like, I'm sorry.
Like, just, it's like, not no worth it. Especially when it's something you love, like you genuinely love this, and to make that your discussion all the time, it could just be, it could make you lose this, the passion sometimes. I've seen that too. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. It's just crazy. Yeah. I noticed you have a design studio. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Is that like, so she hesitates. She goes, girl. No. Oh, so, yeah. So, you know, so I know you have a design studio. Tell us more about that. How did that come into play? And how has that been, I guess, maintaining that too amongst everything, or has it been like, is it hard to maintain it?
Yeah. So that I would say is my pandemic child.
Oh, I love it. Everyone has a pandemic. Like, wait, that's so funny. I'm done. Yeah.
Oh man. I feel like one of the things that is really interesting about just being like a content creator is that you're connecting with other creators. Yeah. And one of the comments that I would always get is, oh, your thumbnails are so good. Oh, your Instagram story templates are so good. Like, you know, like that kind of commentary. Mm-hmm. And I remember sometime last spring, a blogger that I follow was like, I don't know if you do this, but like, I would pay you to like make some Instagram templates and like redo a logo for me. And I was like, wow. I don't, but I could.
I will do it. You said payment. Okay.
Because you know, and something that I think is, I guess I thought was maybe silly or like, you know, just kind of a break from my science classes when I was an undergrad is I took, you know, a web design class and I took a graphic design class. So it wasn't like, you know, I didn't know anything about you know, logo design or anything.
It's coming like, out the woodworks.
Yeah. It's like I have the background knowledge, but it's just not something I ever thought like, oh, I'm actually going to like use this and like try to make a business around. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I feel like with creative freelancing and really just any kind of freelancing in general, you know, you do one client, you do a good job and, you know, they tell other people and then it's just like becomes like a word of mouth thing. Mm-hmm. And you have, you know, other creators and other small business owners who are now reaching out to me saying, oh, like, I'm interested in doing this. And so I was like, well, you know, and I'm always, my mom always says I'm extra. So like, of course, I have to take everything and like, you know, make it very professional and have it very organized. And, you know, that helps me stay organized and, you know, balanced in general. But, you know, when you turn it into something that's like professional, so like people, there's a website to go to, there's a whole process. And so that, you know, it's like building a business. And so that just kind of, I don't know, just it came about during the pandemic. So yeah.
That's incredible. Graphic designer, graphic designer, Gabby, pharmacology, PhD. Yeah. I love that. You keep yourself busy, girl. Sometimes.
Yeah,
just
I do.
Like,
I do.
You, the people wanted it. You gave them your services. Listen, that's what you do in quarantine at this point. Everybody, you gotta just do it. What do you think is the one thing you'd like to tell our listeners in terms of, you know, balancing all these things? I guess I hate the word balance too, because it's more of like, how do you balance? It's kind of like prioritizing more, but you know what, in terms of managing your passion for STEM and your passion for creativity, what is the one thing you would tell our listeners in terms of how to go about that? Like, what was the most important thing that you've learned in your journey?
Yeah. So it's funny because that's like the topic of the video that I'm posting today. So like, you know,
so this is promo. Hold on. Everybody go watch that video. I'll link it down below in the show notes. Yeah.
So I'll give you a little nugget. But you gotta watch the video to see really. I think for me, the biggest thing that I'll say is you almost have to be realistic about the amount of time you actually have to spend on each of these things. So for me, it's, I know that my PhD and my research is like my number one priority, you know, my biggest time taker. And, you know, between the hours of 8 and 6, like that is like, you know, the zone for that. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of doing everything else, it's really about, you know, calculating and figuring out, okay, it's going to take me, you know, 2 hours to brainstorm a video idea and plan that out. It's going to take me 2 hours to film it. It's going to take me 6 hours to edit it. Where in my schedule realistically does that fit? Mm-hmm. And, you know, for like the design studio, being very strict with my boundaries in terms of I have time realistically to take two clients.
Right.
So, right. You know, and not going over that. Because if I go over that, then I'm overcommitted, I'm stressed out, and everything that I do will become less quality. So,
right. No. Yeah.
So my biggest thing I think that I tell people is like, know your boundaries, set your boundaries, and commit to that. So, yeah.
Oh, Gabby, I freaking love you, girl. Just such a character. I just love your energy and I just love what you're doing. Please keep doing it. And I will be watching. I will be hyping you up, girl, from Connecticut and DC. Okay. But thank you so, so much for being here. I really think our listeners will have a lot to take away from this conversation. And just in terms of seeing your ambition, but also seeing how you really seem to want to inform people and make sure like you're doing your part in whatever you're doing, whether it's the creative space or STEM, like you really seem to want to help the community out there, which I love that. And you just do it in your own way, in the Gabby way. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks
you.
For having me. Yeah,
that was
fun.
All right. Bye.
Hope you love the conversation. If you like this content and are craving more, make sure to subscribe to the pod and check out the show notes to catch up with me on social, find behind the scenes content, and more fun. Until next time, I'll be here in my bonnet. Bye.